Why don't we just start with the two unanswered questions from the last talk, just for continuity? Let's see if they're here.
I saw Tarun.
Right. Yeah, Tarun, do you want to? There you go. Okay. Oh, sorry, Josh. I think you need to make me co-host to unmute people. Thanks. Okay, Tarun, go ahead.
Hi, Matthew. So, great talk. So, I have a quick question, which is that my understanding is that you can analytically show that if I define a mixed state based on your protocol, which is take all the pure states and weight them by your probability of corresponding outcomes of measurements, you can show that its identity everywhere, including at the critical point. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, if you sum over the measurement outcomes,
Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
yeah, that I think it's every. That's my understanding is that everywhere
I see, I see.
it's.
So I guess that means that there can't even exist any kind of simple Bell inequality like test, which can be done in a simpler way than it will face a similar obstacle as post-selection. Even, I mean,
Yeah.
for example, you do some Bell inequality measurement and you average the outcome of such things that will not lead you any information, I guess. So my second question was, is there some way to bias your protocol in a way so that you don't end up in an identity density matrix from the mixed state point of view, or you think that's not helpful? Because if you don't have identity, then there's a hope that maybe there's more, this elephant in the room you described, maybe easier to tackle it if you don't have such a completely separable state from a mixed state point of view.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider different systems, I mean which have symmetry, an Ising symmetry, and you look at Lindblad evolution, and you could presumably find transitions from an Ising symmetry broken phase in high dimensions, at least from Ising symmetry broken phase to one that isn't.
But you think that's maybe fundamentally different, right? I'm thinking something more closer to what you have. I don't know whether that's a different
Yeah.
kind of condition.
I mean, you can ask maybe a question like, what if you only keep track of some of the measurements, but not all of them?
Yeah, something like that, maybe.
That's a good question. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I mean, how quickly do you start summing over some measurements that you
Right.
write down?
Thinking some kind of a filter function which maybe takes you to some non-identity state, but yeah.
Yeah, they might still have some information from because you're
Right.
making measurements. I mean, that's an interesting, and that's a good suggestion, actually. I'd like to think about that, Tarun. Thank you.
Can I ask one more question? I don't know how much time we have. Just maybe one
Sorry,
last.
well, I think Yaodong might have had a comment there.
So what I wanted to say is that in order to have a bias, this bias is usually state dependent, and you have
I see.
to compute it for each state. And in general, there's not a good way to do so, and that's the difficulty I've been finding.
I see. I
There
see.
may be other ways to get around this, but
I see. Thanks.
yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Shannon.
I think maybe just to ask a follow-up question. Is there here you are thinking about just one kind of a channel, which is measurement. Suppose you do something else, like some phase, some defacing channel or some, I don't know, amplitude channel, some of the other ways of decoherent a system. Do you find similar transition, or has that not been explored?
But I mean, presumably any of the channels you can get by doing coupling to ancillas and making measurements on ancillas, I guess, is that
I see. Okay, I see. I was guessing that, but I wasn't
right? I
sure. I
think
see.
that's the case. So you can embed them.
I
I mean,
see.
you
So
may
it
need to
doesn't
be
matter.
introducing ancillas, as you go along. I mean, at
I see. I see.
every time you want to run a channel, but.
Okay. That I think that I recall something like that. I see. Okay. Thank you. I think that was all. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Ti Ha Kia, you can go ahead and ask your question from the last talk if you want.
Right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, yes. My question is like in the example of Keelan's and Hughes example, I want you have to see this. You have this, initially, you have completely mistakes, and from the mistake, after making a lot of measurements, you can go into the pure state somewhat, right? So my question is this a picture can be seen as some sort of quantum zero effect or dynamical decoupling adding on to the system?
I just wasn't catching that. Was that for me? I think it might have been, or... But I couldn't really
catch it. Can you hear me?
But it's a bit garbled. I don't know, Tim, did you pick up the question or not?
I think he was asking for the Golems and Hughes perspective of the transition. He's asking, can it be interpreted as like a quantum Zeno purification or dynamical decoupling?
Yes.
Well, I think in the, they start with this maximum mixed state. If you make enough measurements, it purifies. And so that's like you're looking at it enough to get it into a pure state. I mean, so maybe that, that's like a quantum Zeno effect. But then there's the other side of the transition, what they call the impure side, where you don't make so many measurements and it starts maximally mixed. It starts purifying a bit, but then doesn't purify entirely. So that, that wouldn't be quantum Zeno.
Right, but this is big simply because you don't make enough measurements, right?
Yeah, sorry, I just...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, but I can't, my brain doesn't decipher the... I don't know, Tim, do you get that or not?
I think it was saying you don't make enough measurements on the volume loss side to purify it.
Yeah.
Right, so...
Is this picture correct?
Yeah, I think that's the right picture, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Leo, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think I got confused and missed something because in the beginning you talked about stabilizers. You had this picture of the more stabilizers you have, the larger the entropy. You had this formula 1/2 NB plus NC log 2, which described the, I thought there were stabilizers that are connecting region, let's say A to B and A to C.
Yeah, that's the more stabilized you have that cross the cut,
right?
The larger the entanglement is.
Right, so the larger the entropy then.
The larger the entanglement entropy.
Right, but then I got confused how that's consistent with then what you finished with, this purification transition, where you were talking about, you start out with a very strongly entangled state, maximally entangled, and then you somehow, the more stabilized you have, you then reduce the entropy by L minus N times log 2.
Well, there's a difference between entanglement entropy and entropy. So if you have so let's say you have L qubits and L stabilizers. So then you stabilize a pure state. So you know the state exactly. That has no entropy whatsoever.
Okay.
But it can be very entangled. We can have a large entanglement entropy. So the last part with the Golems and Hughes, we're talking about really the entropy of the states that are not, the entropy of the states that are not being stabilized.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Just a reminder to everyone to go ahead and raise your hand if you have a question. In the meantime, let me ask Frank a question. So you mentioned the relevance of projected representation for 1D MPS in the context of these SVTs. And I was wondering if you have like a Hamiltonian that has a matrix product operator with projected representation on the the auxiliary degrees of freedom. Are those Hamiltonians special in any way?
That's a good question. Basically, you would implement the symmetries at some sort of super operator level.
Mm-hmm.
But then I mean, for Hamiltonians, I don't know. I mean, if you play this game on unitaries, there, I mean, I think also Shia found like a classification of unitary MPOs. There is kind of some classification scheme which is not based on projective representations, but at the level of the Hamiltonian, if the MPO has a projective representation, for some symmetries, I wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, find it hard to relate because at that level, how to? No, I mean, I really wouldn't know. What
to okay. Make up.
So can I ask Frank a question?
Yeah, sure.
So I guess the nice part about the matrix product state is it's you can multiply matrices together really quickly, and you know down the row of matrices. But with PEPs in two dimensions, that's much more difficult to do the contractions.
Yes.
My understanding. Has there been any progress in ways to do that, either exactly or within some approximate schemes in the last few years, or is it?
Well, there is, actually, together with Mike, we were thinking, so one thing that we saw, like what I pointed out in the earlier part of my talk, was this canonical form, so that we had a gauge degree of freedom such that we can efficiently contract it, right? So basically that we could just calculate an observable without having to contract all the tensors coming from the left and from the right. And now one thing that we have been exploring together with Mike was to kind of generalize this to 2D, right? So that we have something a little bit like this Schmidt decomposition, but at an MPO level. And it turns out there we can define a subclass of PEPs that can be contracted efficiently.
I see.
So these are what we call like isometric tensor networks. I can quickly put the reference into the chat if this is of interest.
And what kind of phases can you access?
Right, that's a good question. First of all, we can access certain gapped phases. In particular, we believe that, or we can show that all phases that are adiabatically connected to StringNet models can be represented in this way. States where we know that we cannot represent them are states that have some algebraic correlation. So there are certain states, it's actually quite interesting. In 1D, we know that we can only represent states with exponentially decaying correlation functions and with MPS, right? So the moment that we write down an MPS, we know that all the correlations will decay exponentially at a certain length scale. For 2D PEPs, this is different. So for example, the quantum, like the Rochester-Kievelson wave function on a square lattice, we can just write down a very simple tensor network form, but yet it has algebraic correlations.
And with a bond dimension small, is that?
With a bond dimension, in that case, we have PEPs of bond dimension 2,
okay.
But yet the correlations in the state decay algebraically. These kind of states would not be able to bring into the into this canonical form. I put the reference to this isometric tensor network paper into the chat. I'm not sure if anyone can read it.
Yeah, there we see it. 1902. All right, thank you. With Mike. Oh, that's the mic. It's out of time.
So we have a question from Hossein Degani. Hossein, you can go ahead.
Hi, so I have a question for Matthew. So thank you for the nice talk. So if instead of considering these quantum circuits, we consider more conventional, condensed matter systems where we have a bath, where our system can couple to a bath. And then if we look into the, we basically trace what is happening, track what is happening on the bath as well, are we going to see the same kind of phase transition? So we are still tracking the quantum jumps of the wave function. Is there any fundamental difference whether our measurements are discrete in time or continuous in time? Basically, this is my question.
Yeah, I don't think the discrete versus continuous in time is would change things dramatically. But when you say a bath, are you considering a bath which has its own internal quantum dynamics? In that case, I think it would be, more like the other type of open system where it's not really, you can't think in terms of pure states of the system.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but for example, there are experiments that people let the system to, there's some decoherence, for example, in the, different quantum simulators that your qubit, for example, it has some decoherence with some, with some reservoir, and then you can really see the quantum jumps. You can really, see the quantum jumps in the wave function. And then you can extract that information. Let's say we stick to the wave function. We don't, average over, different, we don't go to the density matrix. Then you think that basically we should see the same kind of phase transition, and for example, the universality class would be the same?
Well, it sounds like some of the phenomenology may be the same. I mean, these are being monitored, I guess, right? When you're looking at the quantum jumps, I mean, you're monitoring. I mean, as far as the phase transition, it depends on the circuit, the dimensionality you're in, and so it may, that's a more complicated set of factors that go into it. But.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Sorry, I got to unmute myself. Dajuan Lu, you can go ahead.
Paul?
Sorry, try again.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. I have a question for Matthew. I think in this system, we use the mutual information as a kind of the order parameter to detect the different phases. And it seems that this mutual information is not local. But how does this correspond to the Euler order parameters, which are local? And I saw the answer in the Q&A that you can use like the correspondent to the boundary changing operator. But for the critical point, it seems that the entanglement entropy is a volume law, and it's logarithmic, and it's not local in a sense.
So you're saying, is there a notion of a local order parameter?
It kind of is, yeah.
Well, I think Gullens and Hughes had thought about a situation where they coupled in one ancilla to one qubit at, before evolving the circuit and then involving the qubits and asking whether or not the whether the circuit disentangled from the qubit and whether the qubit became, the ancilla qubit became pure or not. And there, that's, that was sort of like an order parameter in the sense that it was a property of a single ancilla qubit. So maybe that's, maybe that would be,
I also saw that you can relate the mutual information to some four point correlation function. But kind of the mutual information is non-local, and how this correspondence works in a critical point.
Yeah, I mean, like at a critical point, even just in an Ising model at the critical point, if you look at a two-point function, that's, those two points can be far apart. So that's, I don't know if you call that non-local, but, you know, with the mutual information, you can have region A and region B being far apart. And in some sense, it, you know, it's going to look like a correlation function. It's going to fall off as a Powell law. You know, and the non-locality is embedded in the critical fluctuations inside the system. So.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Jordan, do you want to go ahead?
Hi, so Matthew, do I understand correctly that the things you measure don't depend on for how long you evolve the system, as long as you wait for a time like a little bigger than the system size or something like that? Is that right?
Wait, so you're asking how it does the depth of the circuit matter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly does for the purification transition. So in the, you know, if you start with a maximally mixed state, if you run it for times which are polynomial in the system size, you, if you're in the impure state, you'll still be partially mixed. But if you run it for exponentially long times in the system size, you will eventually purify. So the purification transition is really only present, if you will, when you, the depth of the circuit is polynomial in the system size. And there, in that region, is where it purifies in one case and doesn't purify in the other phase. Now, I think for the entanglement transition, if you just start with some qubits, you can run the circuit as long as you want into the steady state, and you just get a state at the end that you can look at. And you know, basically, after long enough times, the statistical properties of the wave function stop changing, so you don't have to continue to run the circuit.
So that's kind of what I wanted to ask about. There is some sense in which there is a steady state, but I can't think of it in terms of a steady state density matrix. So it's how should I think about it? It's like there's some preferred preparation of the identity density matrix that's a steady state.
Well, I mean, in this case the, you're following a wave function, and so if you want a density matrix, it's just an outer product of that wave function, and it, you know, it depends on time, but its statistical properties are time translationally invariant. Right,
by statistical properties, you mean like things like the mutual information and the other quantities that you're measuring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And their fluctuations shrink rapidly with system size.
Yeah. You can ask about the entanglement entropy in a region of length L sub A, how big are the fluctuations in the entanglement entropy from run to run?
Right.
And I think, Yaodan, correct me if this is wrong, but it's like LA, it's a length to the 1/3, roughly.
Yes.
So it, there is, you know, there's a variance to the entanglement entropy, you know. But that variance is due to the fact that you're taking random unitaries. So every time you run the circuit, it's a different set of unitaries, and it's different set of measurement outcomes and different positions of the measurement. So, you know, so you have an ensemble, you know, random ensemble, mm-hmm. and you have an ensemble of outputs for the entanglement entropy, you know, with an average and then a variance. And the variance, it's, you know, it does self-average in the sense that the variance divided by the average goes to zero and L goes to infinity.
I see, but the variance within a particular run as a function of time is even smaller than that?
No, I think the variance in particular run is going to be the same. I mean, if you run it for a very long time and then you look at the entanglement entropy and then you run it for much longer time and look at it,
right,
temporal, because, you know, the circuit is not translationally invariant because it's got random unitaries. So the temporal variance should be of S sub A should be L sub A to the 1/3, roughly.
I see, the same kind of thing. Okay, I see.
Kind of thing.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I don't see any hands up. This is a last call for your final questions in the school. Last opportunity.
Maybe we should take this opportunity to thank the organizers. Don't ask me who they all are, though. Quickly, Shay, Mike, Tim, Ashwin. Who else?
Yinchen, Chong, and Benny.
Okay. Well, thanks to you guys, really, for putting together what was really a smooth running and, you know, enjoyable week. I certainly had a lot of fun with that. So,
yeah, thanks, Matthew. I think
thanks.
Mike himself is going to add some comments, but before he does that, I want to thank Mike for he can't thank himself, so for doing an enormous amount of the work and. Yeah, really being here for all the technical issues. I guess Tim, you will take it from here, right?
I guess before Leo had one more question. I guess for
I'm sorry.
I see. Okay.
Sorry. I didn't want to interrupt. I think it's just a technical question. I was trying to understand what this limitation to the Clifford unitaries mean. Is it just, should I think of it as if I think of it in terms of sort of equivalent Hamiltonian, like in continuous time evolution, is it just where you're only rotating by pi over 2 or by pi or something like this rather than an arbitrary SU2 rotation?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're discretizing the phase of the wave function.
Right. So there's only like certain points that you can go on the sphere.
Yeah, like 1i minus 1 yeah, minus I. Okay. Exactly.
So should I think of it as like, it's not an approximation, it's more like you're looking at a class of models rather than...
There's a class of models and there's a class of wave functions which are stabilized by stabilizers, which, you know, which basically have... You know, the amplitude is 1i minus 1 minus i.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Yeah, very clear talk. Thank you, Mike Matthew.
Mike?
Okay, yeah, so I just wanted to make some really quick remarks just to wrap things up. I think it's been a great school.